Calling all lovers of mystery and fans of a good story. If you haven't already heard me talk about June's journey, you're in for a treat. It's time to don your detective hat in this free hidden object mobile game that delves into the captivating journey of June Parker, a self-proclaimed detective on a quest to unravel the mystery surrounding her sister's untimely death. In June's journey, you get to play as June, deciphering clues and unveiling secret plots within thousands of beautifully illustrated scenes. And did I mention it's set in the glitzy 1920s? New chapters are added weekly, so you will never run out of new thrills to uncover, and you can also personalize and decorate your very own Orchid Island where the story takes place. How sharp are your detective skills? Find out when you download June's Journey on your Android or iOS device, or play online via Facebook Games. Your detective journey awaits.
Hi, I'm Alexis Ohanian. You may know me as one of the co-founders of Reddit, but more recently, a large part of my identity is being a father to my wonderful daughters. In my podcast, Business Dad, I hope to open the conversation about working parents a bit. You'll get to hear from a wide range of business dads, from Rainn Wilson and Guy Raz to Todd Carmichael and Shane Battier, to find out how they balance being a dad with a successful career. Business Dad is available now, so be sure to listen and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
Here we go. It's another IGN UK podcast with me, Simon Cardy, and I am this week joined yet again by Matt Perslow.
Hello.
Hello. And Joe Scrabbles.
Hi.
Hi. I'm not going to spend the whole show just copying whatever you guys say, because that would be very irritating for absolutely everyone. Let's get straight into it. Today, The Batman is in cinemas. Again, a new Batman film. Another one. What do we think of the new Batman, guys? I, for one, absolutely love it.
It is a pretty good Batman film.
I think it's quite good.
There we go. And that's the end of the podcast. There we go. What an episode. Join us next week for more Batman. We will continue to talk about the Batman. What a fun little joke that was from me. I love this film. I think me and Matt, maybe we're on very similar wavelengths with this film.
Minusculely cooled on it over time, but I still think it's exactly, at least tonally, what I want from a Batman film.
Mm-hmm. That's fair. I know Joe, you still enjoyed it, but you are maybe slightly cooler on it than both of us.
Yeah, I just think it's very difficult for me. Obviously, we're not going to spoil this. We'll get that out of the way. No spoilers, obviously. I personally felt the first two thirds were a lot better than the final third, and I think the way it goes did not satisfy me at all. That's my issue.
That's interesting. So I think I'm similar, but I actually like the first third and the last third. The middle third is what dragged for me a little bit, and I feel like this is a film that maybe will draft people, as it's well documented. This is a 3-hour film, which is a long time. I like long films, so I'm into it. I like slow long films. I wouldn't say it's even a slow film, because a lot happens in this film, and that is maybe my one negative that I really, when I instantly saw it, I was like, oh, they've tried to maybe make three films in one here, whereas they should have taken one storyline out. I'm not sure which one, or even just streamlined it all a lot. But anyway, let's go on to the positives, because I do think it's an overwhelmingly good film, which, for one, it's the tone of Batman I've always wanted. I like, and I know people are kind of bored of the phrase, like, gritty, dark Batman, but this is very much on that end of the scale, and it's moody Batman. It's like you were saying, Matt, it's very much a Batman where Bruce Wayne is the mask, not Batman.
Yeah, which is, long-term listeners might remember, ages and ages ago I had like a little tirade about this, where I was convinced that Batman is the character and Bruce Wayne is the thing that he has to keep up for personal, like, public appearances. I think the thing about it being gritty, though, the thing that I love so much about this, and why it's tonally and visually exactly the Batman film I've been seeking for, is it's still very comic booky. Like, Gotham is very gothic and very stylized. It's not Christopher Nolan's version of a grounded Batman. It's very much akin to kind of like those late 80s kind of comics, where you know, the era of Watchmen and Batman Year One and stuff like that. It pulls a lot from that kind of stuff. So there's almost a bit of Joker to it, like that depiction of Gotham, where when there's a sequence where they're in a subway kind of train and it's just covered in graffiti, and that subway train could have been taken from the Joker movie. But it's on the backdrop of a city where it's constantly raining, it's everything's in shadow, and the shadows are like pitch noir black, which gives
such a
wonderful
world. It's not a place you
want
to live. I don't know why you choose to live there.
Oh God, Matt Reeves fucking loves Seven. Like, this is the most Seven film since Seven. It's wild.
That is the obvious. When you watch the trailers, you can see, he likes David Fincher. And can you blame him? Because it's Seven and Zodiac.
But the length to which the homage goes to Seven in this is kind of wild. Like, there were bits where I was like, is this like a joke that this is now a Seven film? Not in a bad way. Like, Seven's one of my favourite films. I'm super into it, and this was great for that. What I will say is, what I loved about this place they built, you're right, it's gritty, it's realistic, and it's grim. But that Times Square sort of place that they've made, that a few events sort of, or, you know, a few shots take place around, has this, like, odd, like, semi-urban gothic air. Like, there's something to it that feels beyond reality. Mm-hmm. It's got almost like a Shibuya Station vibe at the same time as, like, a really fucked up Shibuya Station.
This is going to be a weird comparison.
Or Shibuya Crossing, I should say.
It reminded me, weirdly, of Liberty City from GTA 4. I don't know, there's a feeling, like, of that, and I don't know why.
And I love that sits at, like, the kind of the metaphorical center of this city, where everything outside of it is gross, but there's this one bit in the middle that's got, like, this really... At one point, you could tell this was super wealthy and it's gone totally to seed. And, like, that really worked for me. Like, you got a sense... It kind of communicates a history to that city in a really visual way, which is great.
It is kind of relentlessly dark and grim. Like, I will say this now. Like, this is... Whereas The Dark Knight kind of walked the line on kids being able to watch it, this one is very... Like, even the very opening film, like, from the get-go, you know, okay, we're not joking around here. Like, it is... It is a 15 here, right, isn't it? Have we...
Yes.
If
not,
it should be.
Thing I find interesting about it, though, is it balances quite deftly, certainly in those opening stages. Like, you're right, the actual events and things that are being depicted are truly unpleasant. I would say The Dark Knight has a overall grimmer tone, even though...
Really?
Well, because you get... There's elements of humour all the way through this. There are funny bits, or lines, at the very least. And there's also... They're not afraid to lean into, like, Batman having this kind of wild, omniscient, noir voiceover that occasionally pops in. Like, the film opens with Batman, or, you know, more or less opens with Batman doing an extended... He's doing the yellow boxes in the corner of a comic book panel. Like, he's talking over the images you're seeing. You're getting a view into his psyche. He's not talking to anyone, really. Like, and... There is an element of, like, comic book camp that kind of creeps around the edges that I think...
Absolutely.
It lightens those corners just that little bit, and I think it really works.
I think this is one of the things that I love so much about it, because the Christopher Nolan films, you know, and I'm not taking anything away from those. Those are incredible films, or certainly at least one and two, you know, three a little bit less. But they are designed to be what is the Batman mythos if brought into our reality. Whereas this is just unashamedly, it's a comic book movie. In the same way that, like, Marvel is almost unashamedly comic book. But this finds the seeds of, well, what is Batman in, like, his grimmest kind of storylines? It's like, he's a really good detective that punches people really fucking hard. And it kind of, it runs with that, and so keeps a lot of the trappings while still being, you know, very cinematically influenced, you say, by Fincher. And as Carly, you were saying, like, there are detective film homages here that go way back to, like, the 70s.
Exactly. It's much more like Chinatown or The French Connection than I thought it would be, which was a pleasant surprise, because I was going in fully expecting the Zodiac and Seven stuff, because from the trailers it looked like that. But I was pleasantly surprised that for a lot of it you do get kind of almost like a Gordon and Batman buddy cop kind of thing. Whereas I will say he's
buddy.
Meant to be the worst, not buddy, but, you know, he's meant
colleague
to be, they're
cop.
Meant to be great detectives, and for the most part, they're maybe not. which is quite funny as well. There's some funny moments surrounded by that. But yeah, I love it. And we haven't even gone to the performance. I do think, I mean, it's still early days. I think Pattinson might be my favourite Batman. This is how I've always seen Batman, as kind of this moody, shrouded, sort of just very insular, lonely person. And
I like his Batman a lot. I don't like his Bruce Wayne very much. I'd like some of those bits. I was like, I just don't. I know they're going for a different kind of Bruce Wayne, but I just didn't buy it in the same way that I would like. I think a Bale version of that Bruce Wayne without the Playboy stuff, I think possibly would have got me a little more. I don't know. There's something about the sort of skulking, putting on sunglasses inside version of
Bruce
Wayne.
Matt Reeves has already spoken about a sequel. And maybe he'll be more like that in it. Maybe he'll, I don't know, who knows? I don't know what. I feel like, well, we're not going to go into any sort of spoilers. I feel like maybe he could be a different Batman in the next one if they were going to do that. But Zoe Kravitz is incredible as Catwoman. I really like her character. And they build out that character much more than we've ever seen before. It's not just, you know, a weird lady who likes cats who robs banks. Like, well, it's much more of a...
With regard to those older film references, like, she is given the space to be like more than a love interest, more than a villain.
Exactly.
Like, she has like light and shade, and it really feels like this is I genuinely do not mean to say dynamic duo just because it's Batman, but there is like a dynamic between those
two. It's as much her story as it is Bruce Wayne's. Like, we can't ignore Paul Dano, who he's one of my favourite actors anyway.
He's the best.
But he's full on just, like, there's points in this film where I was just, you know, flashbacks to him screaming in There'll Be Blood, and I was enjoying myself greatly.
If you were hoping for Paul Dano to do that weird thing where he goes, like, there's a lot of that. Don't worry about it. It's great.
I love him. He's a very sinister man.
I was saying this to someone else the other day. Paul Dano's version of aging appears to be just that his face gets wider, and not in like a chubby way.
Weird,
it's like
isn't it?
Someone's pulling a character creator slider over time.
I always think he looks a little bit like Morph with hair. He's like, got a Morph look.
The first reveal of Dano's like actual face in this, I was like, that's like twice as much face as there used to be on that head. Mm-hmm. It's amazing.
That's
cool.
This is a great film in its own right, but yeah, it does such a great job, like we said, of reminding you of Seven, of Zodiac, of all these great films, Chinatown, and also because you got Dano being a weird like recluse, like prisoners as well, like him in that. Like, you're just constantly reminded of all these great films, and then that's kind of thinking, like, yeah, if you add all those together, you're going to get a pretty great film. And yeah, I do want to see it again, although it is very long.
I am not watching this again until I'm at home watching it. But I can't watch this in the cinema again.
That's the thing. It's the kind of thing where I do want to watch again in the cinema because the sound and the music is so good that I kind of want it full blast.
Also, the music's really weird because there's only about four tracks in the entire film. Like, it just uses them, but that sparing use really hammers home, like, the meaning of each of those tracks. Like, when you hear it, you kind of get the vibe. I'm not saying that, like, you should, if you're interested in this film, even if you're not totally sure whether you'll like it, I think it is worth watching in the cinema the first time for that reason. Like, the sound is so good. I saw it in an IMAX, and like, some of the design is like proper, you can feel it in the pit of your stomach. Your chair is literally shaking. Like, not in a there's noisy things happening, it's just like
the first
dark.
Time you see the Batmobile in this film, I was like, yes, here we go.
can I say what it's not a, I don't think it's a spoiler to say that the Batmobile is revealed in an interesting way. Like, the first time I saw it, the thing it reminded me of is the furnace in Home Alone. You know when he goes downstairs and like has that vision of the furnace like coming to life? Mm-hmm. Like, that's what it does.
That's what I thought. To me, I thought it was like it was like an animal, it was like a dragon or something.
Yeah.
It was amazing. That's a great moment.
That was so wild.
But the thing that's really interesting about the way they use the Batmobile is a lot of, like, traditionally in Batman, you'd film that on massive cranes and you'd do very wide angle kind of shots to show kind of like a tank basically kind of thundering through Gotham. so much of this is done like in the cockpit with Batman. It's
the
very
car chases
very
are weird.
Yeah, it's so kind of like focused on the people rather than it's like Batman using a tool rather than wow, look at this incredible piece of machinery that he's made.
I do have to say, like I was losing track in that car chase. Like it didn't have the sort of like I don't know how you'd say it, like the traditional like sort of candy-coated action pleasure that you would get out of a car chase. And I know that's what it wants to be doing, and that's fine. But I think I didn't get as much. And this kind of comes to a lot of the action in the film. I think when it gets into big set pieces, those are the points where I started drifting a little bit.
It's definitely best when it's character-led, I think. And also, we haven't mentioned Colin Farrell's Penguin is fantastic as well. He's completely unrecognisable. It's amazing.
I'm so glad he's coming back. Like, that character gets more is very pleasing because he is having a fucking ball doing that. It's really fun.
Yeah, I very much enjoy this film. Like, Matt Reeves is so good. Like, I don't think he's going to go under the radar any longer. But like his last, he directed the second and third Planet of the Apes films recently, and they are brilliant. And not enough. I always say it's not enough people have watched these. Maybe
they're
everyone's
crazy,
watched these now, and I'm just shouting at nobody. But watch those if you can. I think the third one just arrived on Disney Plus, but you know, watch them all. But yeah, he's been good for a while, and now hopefully he gets to continue doing this sort of stuff because he's very good. Yeah. Any more thoughts on the Batman?
I know I started this by being a little more down. Like, I literally can't say without spoiling what it is that doesn't work for me. But I will say, like, the last third, I think, just to, like as we've said, kind of drifts into a different type of movie. And at that point,
it becomes more of a Batman film. I think is what we're kind of.
Or it becomes more of a classic superhero film. And I think when you've had so much of that, like, character driven, quiet, interesting, thoughtful stuff. It just didn't gel, like, or at least it didn't gel for me. And I totally get why. All power to everyone who enjoyed that. But for me, it was just the point at which I was like, either I would have liked this to finish, or I would have liked more of the stuff I liked. Like, that stuff didn't hit home.
Yeah, that's
so
fair.
I actually really like the conclusion. I know, Cardi, you said that you were big into the last act as well. Yeah. And part of that is this is something I can't talk about, but there is a particular kind of sequence that happens in the end, which I think reveals such an interesting thing about this version of Batman that I've been waiting to see in films for a long time that I don't think they've ever hit on. And I think that works alongside getting to see Batman hit people, which I do like. The reason why when I say I've cooled on it, it hasn't come down to, I think it's one of my favorite Batman sort of projects I've ever seen. But I do think that the Riddler's not, like, quite as... like, the riddles that he leaves aren't quite as twisty as I would have liked them to be.
They're not really riddles, are they? They're more just, like, in-your-face clues.
I think that's the problem, is he's a serial killer. Like, he's a mission-driven serial killer who has taken on, like, a persona. And I think tying him to what we expect of the Riddler is a problem because, it causes a problem in as much as you expect one thing from that character and you don't really get it. In the same way as, like we said, Batman and Gordon maybe aren't as smart as we'd expect them, and that's actually quite fun in this film. The Riddler isn't as smart as you'd expect him, and that's maybe a little disappointing if you go in with that with that vibe.
I don't know. Well, yeah, obviously we're going to get into spoiler territory, which I don't want to do. I'm sure we'll talk about this film in spoiler terms at some point. Potentially, because there's a lot to talk about. Maybe next week or the week after, we'll do a little spoiler section at the end or something.
Well, but hopefully at some point we can do a podcast interview with Matty Old Reeves.
I would love to talk to Matt Reeves. Because there's so much to talk about. But yeah, let us know what you thought of the Batman in non-spoiler terms, though, because our inbox is read by many people, not everyone's seen it yet. So if you could refrain from putting big spoilers into feedback just yet, or at least subject line it with Batman spoilers.
I think that's the
poor Dale, who hasn't seen it yet, doesn't open it and go, oh no, I don't know, the whole world explodes. that could happen.
Steppenwolf turns up.
No, not Steppenwolf again.
It's a big Justice League crossover.
There we go. So yeah, just be kind. What have we got next? Should we talk about Elden Ring some more? Because
I think
last
week,
Matt, you were the only person who had played any Elden Ring, really. But now, me and Joe are hot on your heels. We've played a lot of Elden Ring.
Don't worry, the experts are here.
Yeah, here we go. It's me, world-renowned Souls fan, who has now stumbled into... I'm obsessed with this game. That's the only way to put it. Like, it's been... something's... I know... I was going to say I don't know why it's clicking. I do know why it's clicking. There's lots of different reasons why it's clicking with me. But it's been a long time since I've had this feeling of waking up and going, oh, I'd like to play this game. I wish I didn't have to work. Like, I just want to... And I just, like, last night I put it on. I was like, oh, I'm just going to play for 20 minutes and try this boss once or something. And I ended up playing for, like, 4.5 hours. I was just like, I just couldn't stop. Like, it's... Yeah, it's just phenomenal.
It's what we've been saying since well before release, but it really is the freedom of it that is getting me through. Like, where in the old games, I would get to a point and just be like, fuck's sake, like, I hate doing this. I'm dreading turning this on again. As much as I want to play this game some more, I just don't want to fight this guy. Mm-hmm. And in this, I'm zapping about so much. I'm like 10 hours in. I haven't done Godric, the first main rune guy. Legacy I'm like level boss, 30. Yeah. And you're just like... And that is testament to... It just kind of opens up and lets me fuck around, go places, explore stuff, and benefit from it. Like,
yeah.
And I think that releasing of the grind from the bits just before a boss and going like... You can go grind anywhere and you will actually probably be making more progress by doing so is like a total release from the frustration I feel with this stuff. And I'm still having moments of like, fuck, I hate this guy and I'm not coming back. But the fact that I have so much more to do means that I'm just like totally at ease with that feeling, which is great.
It's the checkpointing that's the biggest thing for me, I think, is the fact that a lot of when you... before a boss or a tough enemy, there is just a sigh of grace right before it. I don't have to do a 5-minute like fight through some enemies to get there and lose half of my health and not have healing by the time I even get to the boss. That is the biggest thing for me, is that you can just basically walk into boss rooms for the most part. I'm currently, I think I've played about 19-20 hours. I've done the second like legacy dungeon boss, so I'm just a slightly ahead of that. And yeah, I've benefited so much from just leveling up. I spent so much time just like finding good areas to farm runes and just leveling up. I've now got a really good sword that Matt Perzo kindly ushered me towards from an NPC, and I've leveled that up to plus 14, so it's doing mad damage right now.
Mate, like, I've only got plus 2 on anything.
Like, I've, to be fair, it starts at plus 8 when you get it, so I've only leveled up 6 times, but still, like, it's doing a ridiculous amount of damage, and it's a rapier, so it can do like 5 hits, like per like 5, so like a hit a second. I'm just absolutely needling them to death. But yeah, and I think that's the fact that I haven't hit that one boss yet. Like, no boss has taken me more than a few goes, which sounds like I'm bragging, but I've just been leveling up. I've basically been overpowered a lot of the game, which is the way I want to play these games. I want to feel like I can do. I don't want it to be a struggle. And that's
overpowered is a term used by idiots who don't want you to play like you want to play.
Exactly.
And I'm getting the Dragon's Dogma vibes from Magic that I wanted. So
I haven't done Magic at all. I've gone full dex build, and I've just got like, that's why this weapon is so good at the moment.
I haven't really spoken to you, and I think one of the most interesting things about having other people playing it now is I want to know what your builds are. So Cardi, I actually played, you know, a couple of bosses with you last night. So, but if you want to explain to the audience,
I'm currently like level 53, level 54 or something, early 50s, and yeah, I've pumped almost everything into dexterity, figure, and a bit of strength. So, and endurance. So I've got tons of endurance, so I can roll around constantly. But yeah, my weapon, like, the damage levels against dexterity, and I've got that to A, so whatever I pump into the dexterity, this sword does massive. It's currently like doing 260 a hit, which is quite good. I'm having a lovely time with that, but yeah, it's just, I just can't stop playing it. I don't know what it is, and I feel like we had this chat, Matt, like soon I'll burn out a little bit and I'll get maybe halfway through, two-thirds through the game, and I'll be like, right, I'm gonna play something else for a bit, and maybe I don't see this as a game I'm going to play for the next month solid and finish necessarily. I might come back later in the year and finish it, but who knows? At the moment, I can't stop playing it though.
Joe, what's funny, your build?
So I'm magic based. I started way more pure magic, so I was like basically just mind and intelligence. So basically, I can scale. I can do powerful glintstone and what are they called? Like gravity spells. Yeah.
Hmm.
And I have lots of MP, and I've got a third MP flask, so I can, or FP or whatever the fuck they call it in this one. Yeah. So I've basically got like a steady supply of spells. But I read that increasing dexterity speeds up casting. Mm-hmm. So that's been my latest like push. So I think I'm 20 mind, 15 dexterity and 23 intelligence at the moment, so like pretty built for that. And now I'm kind of getting to that point where I've equipped a rapier as well, and I'm kind of at that point where I'm like, do I start trying to dual wield? But I still feel way safer with a shield and one weapon, that kind of thing.
But the good thing is, right after you've defeated Godric, which I know is what you're currently your task is, you'll be able to get that rapier. So
oh, nice.
Yeah, cool. There's a lot of, so I'm, I guess what you call like a battle mage. I kind of switch between, I've got a staff and I've got quite a lot of glintstone magic now, which I kind of focus on. But I'm able to do things like, I can now use the staff as a sword, like a giant beam of light comes out the end of it and I can use it like a blade, which is very, very cool. And I can like turn it into a bow and arrow and stuff like
that. Is that a specific spell? Or
yes.
Is that a,
yeah,
right,
so
cool.
there's a Carrion Slicer, which is you use it more like a longsword. Then you've got ones where you can use it like a rapier. It's
right.
It's really kind of like you can kind of create whatever sort of sword fighter you want with the right spells. But then obviously with the flick of a button, you can then turn it into a magic missile with like Glintstone Pebble or something like that.
Because I know you can get. Also, anyone who's not playing Elden Ring, sorry. I know you can get Carrion Slicer as an Ashes of War, which for those who don't know is something you can like attach to a weapon to change its stats and offer a different ability. So is that a separate thing? Is that like giving that spell to a sword I attach to Ashes of War to?
Yeah. So for example, kind of like Cardi, I know that you've got Glintstone Phalanx is one of the things that Ashes of War can do, which is you essentially cast this on your sword using the Ash of War and it puts four glintstone daggers above your head. That, you can get that as a spell, but actually the spell costs much more to use in FP than it does using the Ash of War.
Oh.
And so it's kind of finding all of these different little synergies. Like, a huge reason why I'm like a dex intelligence build is because they blend really nicely together.
Yeah.
But also with something like a rapier, you can use the glintstone daggers off your Ash of War to stagger people and then get really, really good like critical hits in with things like rapiers and stuff like that. And you get to create like nice little cycles where you lock enemies into patterns that they can't escape from.
Are you doing it as staff in one hand, weapon in the other?
No. So I switch between a rapier and a staff on the one hand,
right.
And
so that's kind
and
of
shield
what I'm
to
doing.
The other. Yeah.
So
I've got a big turtle shield those... like a ninja turtle. That's very good.
I should definitely be asking this off the podcast. But in terms of those Ashes of War abilities, when you've got the shield in one hand, isn't the Ashes of War ability tied to your left hand thing?
So if you've got an Ash of War on your shield, this is good advice for anybody that's playing that doesn't realise this. What you want is, I don't like to have an Ash of War on my shield, because that means that using L2 means that it's going to use
like
the shield.
Yeah.
So what you can do is, if you head out and find there's a shack in Limgrave, quite near the Stormvale Castle.
Is that the Warmaster guy?
There's a guy there who will sell you no skill as Ash of War. Apply that to your shield so that doesn't have a skill anymore, and then when you press
and then
L2...
it transfers the other one.
Yeah, you'll then default to using your main hand. That is a very useful tip.
It is. It's very good. And I like... just from this conversation you can tell there's lots of different ways to play this game. There is no one way to play this game. Like, I don't know what hasn't been said about this game that...
Well, I'll tell you what I haven't seen many people talking about and that I love is, like, the messaging thing has always been in Souls games, but I think in this game more than ever it's like completely blossomed into something like... this is the purest expression of what that messaging thing can do, because it's not just like people saying fingers butthole and like telling you to jump off ledges and stuff. Like, I have found so many useful things that aren't just enemy to the left. Like, people adding gestures. Like, I found a golden seed, which is an upgrade material, by someone just leaving one in the middle of nowhere. And I was like, why the fuck is this here? So I read it, and it was them going, look up. And it was a gesture of the person pointing directly to where I could go to find something. And, like, again, like, this being this freer, open world, those messages have so much more importance in directing you to secrets than they ever did before. You could see one across, like, a chasm and go, like, well, there's got to be a reason someone's left that. And it might be a troll, but it might also be, like, those, I found something and I want to direct you to it.
Those definitely make up for all the ones where people just leave them directly on top of levers, so you can't pull the levers for about until you find the exact right angle. So there are people like that too. But yeah, I like how, and don't get me wrong, there are areas this game where it's very oppressive and you feel like you're in the middle of hell. But there are just pockets where there are just weird creatures and people to speak to, and it doesn't, I like games where not everyone in that world is out to kill you, and like 90% of things in this world are out to kill you. But I think even something as small as just seeing like wildlife that aren't trying to kill you, like deers run past, you the never get that goats. In blood, like Bloodborne or Dark Souls, you're not getting just like deers, like it just makes me feel a bit more like at ease, like I'm not in hell, basically.
I like finding those really sad ghosts around the place as well. Like, there's one who sits next to this swamp and he's just like, I just want to see a sword fight once more. And you're like, what's his game? Why is he so sad about not seeing sword fights?
I love all the creatures, like a lot of the character design, the boss design is obviously incredible. I will say the overall story, I don't really care. I'm not going to lie. I don't really know. And I know this point of these games, you don't really know what's going on a lot of the time.
We're not going to know for months you're on what a task. The story of this game is.
Yeah. And there's a lot of fingers. I know that much. A lot of fingers around.
They love extra arms.
Exactly.
Is it a spoiler? No, I'm not going to say what a second... Like, if you haven't played Godric, I'm not going to give it away. But the second phase of what Godric does, just that cutscene, I was like, that's fucking insane. What the hell is going on? These people are mad.
It's so good. Yeah,
it really makes clear that Miyazaki quote where he said, like, George R.R. Martin wrote us quite a kind of, like, interesting, stately backstory in history, and he might be shocked what I've done with his characters. And I saw that scene, I was like, right, I get why he might be shocked, because he definitely wrote this as a normal king man who went a bit evil, and now he's this fucking freak.
It's
so good.
Yeah, just Elden Ring, it's good, isn't it? And I know it won't be for everyone, and do you know what, I was fully prepared that it wouldn't be for me, but this is the one. And people say, oh, maybe you'll go back and enjoy the others. I don't think I will, because there are things very specifically about Elden Ring that work for me that I know don't work for others. And
this is the problem. Like, obviously, we are very lucky. We got our copies for free and we have the opportunity to bounce off it. Like, it is hard to go, this game might fucking destroy you and you're going to have to pay £70 for it. Although, actually, it's gone pretty cheap in the UK occasionally. But, you know, I can at least say confidently, I am not a Souls person and I am loving this game. And that's, I think that's an important distinction for a lot of people. I would want to hear that.
Yep.
But obviously, your mileage may vary. You could go into this and just be like, after an hour, fuck you. I hate this so much.
I've still seen plenty of people who don't like Souls games still saying, yep, still not for me. So this is not quite the Breath of the Wild experience that some people may lead you to believe it is, but
it is kind of Dragon's Dogma too, so enjoy yourselves.
Exactly. Now on something completely different, Gran Turismo 7 is also out today, so you can go see the Batman and come home and drive a Toyota Yaris.
you keep bringing, every time you reference this game, you bring up the Yaris.
It's this car that's, I think it's Gran Turismo, I think it's 4. I always just bought, like, the Yaris was my first car because it was cheap and you could give it, like, you could boost it basically quite cheaply. I'd always start with the Yaris. And
I can't
for some reason,
which one. The only Gran Turismo I ever properly played was the one where you could get a PT Cruiser straight away and it just seemed like an absolute joke.
Well, we're moving on to why I love Gran Turismo so much is that, I don't know, Gran Turismo 7 feels like, it made me feel like 13 again. Like, I played Gran Turismo 3 and 4 to death. And I'm not a cars person at all. I don't drive. I've never owned a car. I'm not into car culture. But, like, I just loved... something about 3... They're just relaxing games. And they're quite... simple. Like, even with Seven, you're getting, like, I think you can mistake it for being quite sterile and quite basic, all the menu stuff, but I find it quite calming and relaxing, especially when coming from something like from Elden Ring, which is so, like, obtuse, to come to something like Gran Turismo, which is like, here's a menu, do you want to go to the car shop or do you want to race? And I'm like, yes, I want to do either of those things. Thank you for not being cryptic. And yeah, it's just making me feel, it's like coming home, as Michael Caine would say in The Prestige, although he's a liar. Have you ever played much Gran Turismo, Matt?
Literally, you just mentioning GT3, I remember being in Guernsey, going to a shop and buying, can you remember GT3 Prologue? They did a separate mini game before GT3 came out. And I can remember buying that. So I would have bought that, and then I would have bought GT3. At the time, that would have been when I was in high school, around year 10. And my group of friends were very into cars, so I was kind of caught up with that. I must say, like, I've never been very good at them, and even at that age when kind of like you become a bit more obsessed around things. So my understanding of GT sort of starts and ends there.
I used to try and 100% it. I never did that because back in like those days, I haven't got far enough in Seven to know if they haven't, but they had like the full like 12-hour races, which you had to do in real time. Or if your car was good enough, you could sim it, but at most, I think, 3x speed, so it would still last four hours.
You could do, was it B-spec, where it's like you're the manager rather than the actual driver of the car? Yeah.
But that race would still last like 4 hours, which was a long time for a kid to just watch their screen. But the reason I love GT7 so much is because it feels so much like 3 and 4 to me. And it's got that, like, I think it's unfair, the comparison people are going to make. It's like, oh, it's not Forza Horizon. Well, it's not. It's a completely different type of car game. Like, and don't get me wrong, Forza Horizon 5 is a better game, I think. But that's like pure mad open world fun, whereas Gran Turismo is very much track racing, rally racing, and it's all about the progression. But that's one thing I do like that Forza Horizon, I think, 5, like, I think is a phenomenal game, but fumbled the ball badly on, is that Forza Horizon 5, you pretty much can straight away get a car that takes you through the whole game. Like, there's no sense of progression in that game, I don't feel. Like, you're just opening up new races and you finish them with the same car you started with. I felt no real desire to complete my car collection or get new cars. Whereas Gran Turismo 7 is like, the progression, like, you start with, like, I think my first car was like a Renault Clio or something. Not a particularly exciting car. Well, there you go. And like,
you're role playing.
Exactly. I'm role playing as Matt Perslow in Gran Turismo.
Perslow Simulator.
Is it a black Toyota Clio? Oh. Sorry, Toyota Clio, Renault Clio, 16 valve, dynamic interior.
Do you know what?
Dynamite.
Yeah. Ooh. someone knows French. That's what I love, is the progression. I've already got like, and now I've got like a Mini Cooper. You start with these basic cars, and it makes you appreciate when you eventually have enough money to get like a McLaren. Mm-hmm. Like, there is that sense of progression.
I will
which
point
I
out,
really
Cardi,
enjoy.
Mini Cooper was my second car.
Well, there we go. I'm living
unbelievable.
The
it's happening.
Life. You're gonna have a McLaren soon.
Just imagining you in big sunglasses in Saint-Tropez, just being like, Puzzle of Life! Here we go!
But yeah, I feel like if you, like, it's not going to be, if you've not played Gran Turismo and you've never been to Gran Turismo, I don't think this is the one where you're going to be like, this is my Gran Turismo. It's very much Gran Turismo 3 and 4 brought back to life and done very well. I think, like, it looks incredible. I'm sure you may have seen some of the photo mode images going around. It looks
it's
stupidly
wild.
Nice.
The weird thing is, the footage I've seen of the game, I think, looks worse than Forza.
Yes,
but the
definitely.
Photo modes look so good that it doesn't make sense to me how that works.
Yeah, it looks better in photo mode than it does in-game, definitely. And not that it looks bad in-game at all, but yeah, it doesn't quite look like Forza. But yeah, it handles really well. I'm talking about, I don't know cars that well. It feels like they drive well to me. If you want an expert, read and watch Luke Riley's review on IGN, because he knows everything about cars and cars games.
Unbelievable. You know,
yeah. But yeah, I'm having a lovely time with it. I will say, not quite the soundtrack of old, like Gran Turismo 3 and 4, you had your Feeder and your Ash and your stuff like that, which got stuck in your head. These days you're getting like weird disco remixes of Mozart and Bach. It's very odd. I think there is a Bring Me Horizon song on there, actually, which is weird. But there we go. It's enjoyable. If you if you're missing, because I feel like the last couple of Gran Turismo didn't really quite hit the mark, especially like GT Sport wasn't. I think the last one was, it, was that the last one? Or was the one before? Last?
I think I don't so. Know.
It was, yeah.
I think it's a return to form. So yeah, if you're looking to reminisce, I'd recommend a bit of Gran Turismo 7 because it's just a bit of nice fun. There you go, a bit of fun. Joe, you've been playing yes. one of your indie games.
Oh yeah, I just love the alternative as well as the mainstream. I'm a very broad palette of a man. I've been playing Far Changing Tides. Did either of you play Far Lone Sails?
Yes, I did, and it is lovely.
Yes. Well then, Matt, you'll be pleased to know that Far Changing Tides is almost exactly the same.
Yay!
And personally, for me, that works. I think I had a long chat with Tom Marks, our reviewer for this, and we both loved Far Lone Sails. He was the person who pushed me over the edge to play it, because I'd been meaning to for ages, and he was just like, you will fucking love this game, go and play it. And I played it, and I was like, I wanted to put it in my Games of the Year last year, even though it came out way before. But I think Tom had more problems. He likes the base element of Changing Tides, but I think he had more problems with the small changes they have made.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the interesting thing there is just... And I think all his criticisms are totally valid. I just don't think that... They just kind of wash past me. Okay. Because the core vibe of Changing Tides is the same deal as Lone Sails, which is a game in which you are given a big, weird vehicle, and you are a tiny person, and you have to pilot it by pushing a series of buttons. And you can't possibly get to all those buttons at the same time to push everything. You're like running around a cross-section of this vehicle going like...
I've never played them. Like, the way it always looked to me was like almost like a very chilled-out FTL. Is that kind of right?
Kind of, yeah. It's got a... It's the same sort of, like, micromanagement that is impossible to do, like, vibe. Like, you've got to get from here to here to push this to make this work, and something's going to go wrong in the meantime. But you're right, it is chilled. Like, the challenge levels are very low, and it's more about... Really, it's kind of this meditative feel of, like, learning your way around and getting to grips with how this vehicle is going to work and knowing when the right thing to do is. Like, there's not... There's an element of survival to it in as much as sometimes you need engines to move. Like, ideally, you want to be in the wind with your masts up, which is the same in both games, and that just pushes you along for free. But you also have these engines that you can pick stuff up from the world, come in, put it in a burner, and essentially, like, turn it into fuel that pushes you along. And so there's an element of, like, do I conserve this? Do I need to go out and get this? Like, that kind of thing. But you're never really put in a position where it's impossible to proceed or you have to do, like, big scavenging missions to do it. And so really what it's doing is just asking you to sort of be in harmony with this vehicle you have, which is effectively a set of systems that you need to work out how to do things. And this all makes it sound very dry, because what it actually is basically a beautiful cinematic platformer about getting from one place to a possible salvation in a world that is ruined. So in the first game, it's like this dry, like something cataclysmic has happened to the climate and it's dried out the world. In this one, something cataclysmic has happened and it has flooded the world. And you
Waterworld the game.
Yeah, you get a big, weird ship. And over the course of the game, that ship gets augmented and added to, and you just have to deal with various challenges along the way. I'm not going to give those away, because there are set pieces in there that are genuinely more cinematic than the first game. Barring maybe one bit from Lone Sails, where you essentially pilot a gigantic city-sized mech, but, you know.
I know why Matt likes it, then.
it's kind of a walker. And then, like, a big, giant, weird steampunk AT-AT. But then... Yeah, this one, the ship is bigger, so there's more stuff to run around inside and do. And the world around you is bigger. You can be on the surface of the sea, and later on you can submerge and use it as a submarine. And that in itself has loads of cinematic stuff. Like, you will find places that you could miss, but, like, you might find a beautiful whale or a school of jellyfish. And, like, really it's about just... getting this thing chugging along and using it to look around you. And it's fucking gorgeous. Like, the music's beautiful. Like, and it's super... It's not afraid to have these moments where it's, like, 5 minutes of just doing that one thing and moving through a pretty place. and not giving you much more to do than look around and like feel good that you've managed to get this thing working as well as it possibly can. To the point where I was playing at like midnight the other night, and I got to one of those points and I just fell asleep. I was just like, and not in a bad way, not in a bored way. It was just so relaxed. Like, I was like, I've done everything I need to do. I'm in this beautiful place. I had headphones on, so I'm getting the sound of the sea and, like, seabirds and stuff. I just fell asleep. I was like, this is beautiful. Wow. Like, I never fall asleep this easily.
Sounds like a lovely accompaniment to Elden Ring. Just a lovely chill.
Yeah, I wish I'd kept it for while I was playing Elden Ring, because it would have been much more chill. But it's, like, a five-hour game. It's got the other thing that I love about both of these games, and like what I will say is, don't think of this as a sequel. It's a companion piece. Like those two games, you could play one before the other. I would say play them in the order they came out, but really it doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. And they really complement each other in a really lovely way. But it's like 5 hours and just wordlessly told. There's no story given to you in words, but it's all told through the places you're going through, and it's just like heartbreaking and hopeful and like it does so much without saying any words. It's really, really special as far as I'm concerned. Like, I love these games, and I think the fact that it does that through like a tiny little bit of game design surrounded by lots of narrative design is really special. I can't wait to see what this studio Okamotive do, because they've only made these two games. And part of me wants more Far because it's cool. But part of me wants to see what they do with something else and like put those like design chops to more use. I'm fascinated by them. I think they're really, really cool. Mm-hmm. I would love to talk to them on the podcast, actually. Maybe I'll reach out.
Get the thing that I really like about the first one is you kind of start as you're learning. It reminds me a little bit of Firefly in the idea of like just anything to keep this shit moving. Mm. And it's just kind of like every time you go past, oh, there's a book, I'm going to go out and pick the book up because I can burn the book and it will get me like 1 mile further.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then gradually as you learn it, you kind of get a sense of pride in like your ability and the machine. It's like you're going, yeah, girl, like you're getting there, and you learn kind of like, okay, we're coming up to like a ramp, so I'm going to hit that steam button just as I need the extra boost, and then knowing to stop kind of the engines, and you're just purring as you come down.
Exactly.
And that sense of pride that like you've learnt the engineering and the ship is holding together and nothing's falling apart.
Well, and this one has that. It's got the engine and the masts, but then because you've got the submerging and there's an extra system that's given to you later on, you got this like learning piece by piece and then adding new things in and making you learn those. And you get this like that feeling of pride building more and more over the course of the game. But and equally to your point about the like, I'll get anything and chuck it in the fire. Like it does that nice thing again, like Lone Sails, where you'll occasionally find something you know you won't find anywhere else. So like in this one, I found like a little music box. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I am not throwing this in. And I, like, there's no benefit to it, but I hung it up in my, like, sleeping quarters bit of the ship and just left it there. There's a plant at the start of the game, and I made a point of, like, I'm carrying this all the way through. I'm never burning this plant. And it gives you those little moments of tiny story choice that don't matter but feel like they matter. And I think it was Guy Woodward from the Two Good Boys podcast. He put up a tweet the other day just being like, there's a bit in Far Lone Sails where he picked up a radio and it was the only bit of like connection to the world around him, and he kept it and let it play. But eventually you move out of range of the transistor tower,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
And he just goes, I just chucked it in the fire. It had to become fuel because it no longer gave me, you know, that connection. And you're like, that doesn't need to be there. There's no design involved. In like, there's no game design there. It's just pure storytelling for yourself, and I love it. Like, it does so many bits of that. It's such a lovely couple of games. I would urge you to play them if that sounds at all interesting.
It sounds nice and chilled out. Are they on Switch, both of them, or either of them?
Lone Sails is. I don't think Changing Tides is yet.
But Changing Tides is on Game Pass.
It is on Game Pass.
Oh well, there we go.
But I really. I know I said you could play them in either order. I really would play Lone Sails first if you can, just because I think that's almost a tutorial for where Changing Tide. You get that sense of like how they've expanded it. They will work in the opposite direction, but I think Lone Sails will feel smaller by comparison for playing Changing Tides first.
I'm also fairly sure it's on offer on Steam at the moment, so if you do want to play it on PC.
There we go. Fantastic. So I think I will check those out. Sounds nice and relaxing. I could do something nice and chilled out. Because you know what's coming next? Maybe the most stressful game experience in the world.
Oh my
it's
god.
The Endless Search. Inside, it's a UK IGN crew. Yeah, and ones and twos. We got the games gonna play for you. Inside, I got a question for you. Hold tight, the DJ, we're coming through. Yeah, and ones and twos. We got the games gonna play for you. Inside, I got a question for you. Is it in the search? It's back. I have returned with the Hideo Kojima tweet game.
Yes. I think we had a name for this originally.
It might have been. It must have been. It's probably like 3 years. I don't know.
It's been years.
Two or three years since we played this. You played this, Matt. I can't remember when we played this.
Yeah, back in the office.
There we go. If you don't know what this game is, you're a new listener. It is basically Hideo Kojima. If you follow him on Twitter, you may know he likes to tweet, first and foremost, a lot. Mm. And B, tweets about everything and anything, and quite obscure, bizarre things. Earlier today even, when we were recording this, I retweeted a tweet of his where he compares... This is from 9 years ago. Compares a plate of Eggs Benedict, and if you move that plate of Eggs Benedict, it looks like, in his words, a pair of boobies. So this is the kind of genius mind we're working with here. One of the, I think undoubtedly one of the greatest game developers of all time in all seriousness. But
preeminent
also,
in his field, yes. But loves a booby.
and Eggs Benedict. Basically, this game works is, we'll do five rounds of it, and Joe and Matt, you will take turns at going head-to-head. We want... Basically, as an obscure search term that Hideo Kojima has tweeted about. So
it's
say,
a Google whack.
So, for example, you can't use egg, because I used egg. He's tweeted about egg a lot, it turns out. So basically, we want the lowest... It has to be something he's tweeted about. Because if he hasn't tweeted about it, you're not getting the point. It has to be the lowest... He has to tweet about it, but you're looking for the lowest scoring. So a unique... So if you're getting one... They're not. God, you're doing.
Yeah,
well.
It's the number.
Hopefully, that makes sense.
To explain, it's the number of times he's ever tweeted a
it's
single
like pointless.
Word.
Pointless. Yeah.
Yeah.
It'll make sense once we've done one round of it. So, I think Joe, you can go first in the first round.
I can't tell whether I think this is going to be a relatively recent term, so I'm hoping it's used relatively infrequently. I'm going to use the name Villeneuve.
Villeneuve. Mm. Has he spelt it right? You're taking the risk.
I'm sure he spelled it right.
I've written that name many times, so I know how to spell it.
It's because you love Jacques so much.
Okay, I'm not going to tell you how many that is, but Matt, I would like your answer quickly, please.
I am going to go for, as we've already established, he's very big into food, likes to talk about food.
Yes.
There is a famous tweet that involves the word sausage. So I'm going to suggest sausage.
I'm pretty sure we've had sausage in this game before. Oh, we had sausage. And I reckon it might... I actually, for a different podcast, once wrote a whole song that was just made up of lyrics. The lyrics were just made up of Kojima's tweets about sausages. Genuinely.
So, Villeneuve has got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 tweets.
Tweets. Are there any bangers in there?
Well, there isn't the sausage one.
Yeah, very good.
No, they're all just him saying.
Going like, I bought Blade Runner on Blu-ray?
Yeah, basically.
He loves a bit of that.
Oh no, in 2015 he wrote, recent news say Denis Villeneuve, whom I introduced his previous titles at Kojima Station, was chosen for the director of Blade Runner. So maybe he's a... So that's
imagine
nine
that, Kojima being all... He's like, yeah, I showed Sicario
to
my mates.
His sausage ones are special, let me count them, because there's a few. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. It's an 8-9 win to Matt.
Oh my
sausage
God.
Defeats Villeneuve.
I thought there were way more sausage tweets.
There's one which
that.
Is just a lonely couple of Frankfurters, which he's tweeted sausage after the rain.
Yeah. Actually, you know what? Can I just make an early call that at the end of this show, can the music be my song of Kojima's sausage tweets? It's very stupid.
I would allow that. There's one which is just a picture of a sausage with a tiny piece of sauerkraut that says "Farewell, sausage."
Farewell, sausage is the funniest tweet he's ever written. It's so good. Because isn't like that the last? One. I think it was the last day of Gamescom, and so I think it's like a farewell sausage, not farewell to this sausage.
I like this one from 2010. It says Matsuhana is having a huge rack of ribs as well. Me, I'll have some sausage.
Man, it's so funny here. Like, I know this is egotistical. It's so funny hearing these because I've sung those words.
Well, there we go. That's 1 point to Matt. 1-0. We've got 4 more rounds left. Matt, you go first this round.
I don't know. So one of the big problems here is I ended up having to mute Kojima because he talks too much. So I don't know what he's been up to recently.
Pick a weird word.
I'm also going to stick with the food thing because I think that's like potential guaranteed results. I'm going to go cabbage.
Cabbage. Okay. Joe, what have you got up your sleeve?
I'm going to go for, and I don't know why, angel.
Angel.
Ooh. Angel.
I reckon he tweeted about Angel and Buffy.
Oh, I didn't even think of that.
Oh, well, Matt.
Zero.
Congratulations. No, one.
What?
Yes! Oh!
From 2011. You still get one. Oh, well, we might have. I think we've done
I think we've done 2 points for that.
Yeah, you can have 2 points.
With it.
His tweet from 2011 was Ayers Rock Rice Bowl, in quotation marks, cabbage and a deep fried mincemeat on rice. This could be a speciality.
Oh,
there we go.
That does sound nice.
Angel, I can tell you now, has many, many, Joe. So
really?
Yeah, there's a lot here. He said he saw Alita Battle Angel. He wrote about an Argentina film called El Angel. He talks about Dark Angel. There's lots of different angels.
Fucking hell.
Bowie, The Fall of a Rebel Angel, the album by Enigma. I don't know. Charlie's Angels, he's tweeting about. He loves an angel. It's 3-0 to Matt. That's a big early lead. 3 rounds to go. Joe, let's keep them coming. I mean, you could, in the meantime, think of it, maybe get a short list down so we can make the next round.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. I'm going to go criminal.
Criminal?
Yeah. Because there might be some angry tweets in there.
Some angry tweets. Yeah. Matt, what have you got up your sleeve?
I am going to go with a word from one of his most famous posts. Deeds.
Oh, I see, yes.
This is tactical play, this, isn't it? So for criminal there are 5 tweets.
That's not bad.
No, mostly they're about some books he's written. One of the books was called Criminal. No particularly fun ones there worth reading out. Deeds. It's another one. He's got another 2 points.
Ashamed of your words and deeds.
5-0.
Don't be ashamed of your words and deeds, Matt.
I will read out the full thing. In brackets, continued. But once you recognise the secret reason for her exposure, you will feel ashamed of your words and deeds.
I think it's worth remembering that this was a tweet about a scantily clad female character. And the reason that we should have been ashamed for our words and deeds is that she could photosynthesize.
There we go.
Fucking absolute bollocks.
Right, 2 more rounds left. I mean, it's actually impossible for you to win, Joe, but we'll play them anyway.
I wouldn't mind our point.
Yeah, there we go. It's Matt first, though. What has Kojima been tweeting about now? What could it be? I will say, in testing out the search system for this game to make sure I was getting it right, I managed to get a 1 by searching.
Did you?
I know. The first word I thought of, and it was a mad one. wasn't even a mad one. It's a very normal word, but he's only tweeted it once. So you never know. Just don't put death.
Death. I'm just going to go Transformers.
Is he a Transformers man?
He loves robots, but I don't know whether he likes them disguised. That's the problem.
What have you got, Joe?
It's about recycle.
Recycle. Ooh, I like it.
Scattershot.
Matt, Transformers.
Mm-hmm.
Four tweets. Mostly just him saying, saw Transformers the last night. Stuff like that. That is what you're getting.
Specifically the last night.
Yes.
Hasn't even got taste about the Transformers films he watches.
He bought the Transformer trilogy DVD. Thou, I already had TF1's BD. So there we go.
He loves that John Turturro performance in Transformers 1.
He really does. It's an inspiration. So that's four for Transformers. Recycle, Joe. It's a big zero, I'm afraid.
Oh.
He hasn't tweeted recycle once.
He is a criminal against the earth.
Exactly. He does not care. 6-0 to Matt. This is unprecedented.
1 point. I want 1 point.
You get to go first, so what are you thinking?
Oh,
what
are you thinking? I wish I didn't. Beard.
Beard. Ooh.
I'm literally just looking at things in my room. There's a picture of a man with a beard. So Matt, I went, okay.
What is battling the beard?
Can I have, like, two words if they're together as the name of something? So, for example, I want to do New Order, as in the band, because I know he's into that sort of stuff.
But you don't want just New Order. It's up to you, Matt. I think it's
a single search term. I think, but
term,
you have,
okay.
But obviously put the quotation marks around it, so it has to be searching for New Order used together.
Okay.
I want it coming up. I mean, it would be better for me if you didn't, but we'll abide.
Joe, beard. 4.
Not bad.
It's quite good.
Who's
beard's
one he going for?
From 2012, there's...
Does he love Coach Beard in Ted Lasso, is that?
There's a picture of... It looks like, I don't know what it is, some faces. And he goes, face made from mashed potato, seaweed bandana, hair and beard from green onion, and eyeballs from quail egg.
So it sounds. I mean, that sounds like an Elden Ring enemy.
And in 2013, he just tweeted, I wished Governor didn't shave his beard. Don't know what that is in relation to, but something must have been happening. But 4 for beard. Matt, I'm sorry to say, I can't read them all, but New Order. There's dozens.
Really?
he tweets about New Order. Quite a bit.
It's very kind of you to give me the consolation point, Matt.
That's okay.
Yeah, there we go.
I love that
6-1.
Game.
It's a fun game.
We've
and
thought
I'm sure
about trying to do that with other accounts, but it is impossible. There is no one with as broad and strange a set of interests as Kojima.
I like to think he'd enjoy us doing that as well. I don't feel like we're poking fun because he's put all this out into the madness. So, you know.
I don't think he'd care.
No,
I think he's a multi-millionaire and doesn't give a shit.
If we ever, if for some bizarre reason, ever get him on the podcast, we've got to play the game with him.
Oh, that would be so good. Imagine how confused he'd be about us describing it to him.
We've got the sausage song to look forward to at the end of the podcast, but of course, first is some feedback. Joe.
Hello. This is from Ollie Walker. Hi, team. Love the podcast. Long time, first time, all that jazz. In 633, famously, we talked about music that takes you back to games that classically have no association. Mm-hmm. I have a tale of this ilk that I'm sure you won't have heard before. I've not read this before. This has really got me hyped up. I was 16 years old when Halo 4 first launched, as was my best friend. As this was one of the first games to allow split-screen online play, it opened up a whole new world of potential nonsense for us to explore. There's nothing quite like commandeering a warthog with your buddy and mowing down strangers from the comfort of the same sofa. We spent many hours that summer perched in front of our screen. This sedentary lifestyle was, however, in direct conflict with our other main priority at the time. As two young men on the precipice of university, we had been frequently working out in the local health centre. Woohoo! Ooh. Got a couple of young beefcakes here. The idea of the dream male physique firmly cemented in our minds from countless reruns of Pumping Iron.
Oh.
You're watching the Arnie doc over and over again. Is that the one where he says it's better than coming to work out? Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
As we all know, video games and bodybuilding aren't often mutually inclusive. I think that's unfair. With that in mind, and Freshers Week looming ever closer, we devised a solution. This is mad. The solution was a game we called Immersive Halo. Immersive Halo requires ample floor space, good traction and access to nearby hydration. The premise is simple. When your Master Chief avatar crouches, you squat. And when he runs, you run on the spot. You've invented Ring Fit. And sprints included. When he jumps, you jump.
I would be done for. I jump every second. I'm just bunny hopping everywhere.
Yeah. Yeah, as soon as you put a bumper jumper on, you're fucked. This provided a fantastic workout while still allowing us to play our favourite game. I would highly recommend this to anyone who feels like a firefight would be improved by the inclusion of sweat streaming into their eyes. The only catch is that we would play Immersive Halo with our own soundtrack. This soundtrack was non-negotiable and always played at full volume. Oh my god, I've just seen what it is. As such, anyone interested in Immersive Halo must have access to Jamiroquai's 1994 album, The Return of the Space Cowboy.
I'd rather tear my ears off than listen to Jamiroquai.
That's unfair. Jamiroquai is alright. Canned Heat is brilliant. You just don't like hats. These two things, Halo 4 and Jamiroquai, are now fundamentally linked together in my brain. Whenever I hear any of these songs, I am transported back to that sitting room and the two of us, drowned in sweat, cracking on with a needler. 10 out of 10, great memories.
Wow. Is there some sort of subtext here? I don't know. It sounds like a very fun time.
It sounds very sexy.
Yeah,
and set to 90s funk from England's greatest funkster.
The feeling I'm imagining of sweat stinging my eyes while having to listen to Jamiroquai sounds like something from A Clockwork Orange to me. It doesn't sound like fun.
I can't believe you don't like at least bits of Jamiroquai.
Well, I'm just glad we don't have to play any Jamiroquai because it's never been played on this podcast.
I'm just looking at Return of the Space Cowboy. It's got none of the ones I really like. It's not got Canned Heat. That's the main one.
There you go. That sounds just like hell to me. I mean,
love it.
I would probably just go to the gym for like half an hour, and then go out and play Halo normally.
I have restarted Ring Fit recently. It is an absolute killer. I'm not good at it at all. I fucking did myself in doing knee lifts the other day. That is a mean game.
Oh, imagine that with Halo, though. Horrible.
Yeah, I don't want to.
Yeah, there we go. I have an email here from Ian K, who says, "Hey, IGN UK crew.
Hello.
Long-time listener, first time writing in." A lot of people. No, what I'm getting from this is people write in once and they go, "Nah, I won't do that again."
Yeah, I didn't want to respond.
Yeah,
you saying Jamiroquai's shit. Ollie's not coming back.
Well, I'm sorry. I mean, I like you, Ollie. I just don't like JK. I'm sorry. During last week's episode, someone wrote in with a gaming music memory association where hearing a song reminded them of a gaming experience in their life. I wanted to write in and share some of my own experiences, as this is something I think about occasionally.
On occasion, I like to sit down and have a think about the games I associate with music on a bench.
It just happens. Two of these associations immediately came to mind after hearing that email. The first is the Beatles' White Album. Now, that's a good album. I will allow that one. And Metal Gear Solid for the original PlayStation. Metal Gear Solid is one of my favourite games of all time. It was one of the first times I realised a video game could tell a story and be more than a simple platformer or puzzle game. Just imagine the creator of that now talks about ex-Benedict being boobies on Twitter. Mm. I bought a copy with some birthday money around the same time that I really started digging the Beatles. I used to play Metal Gear Solid for hours while listening to the White Album on repeat. That is a weird combo. I mean, I think Kojima would quite... He'd want you to listen to his game, but at the same time, he'd appreciate you. He never actually really tweeted about the Beatles. I'm literally looking it up right now.
I'm interested to
find out. If you were listening to Life on Mars, or like some Hunky... Maybe put Hunky Dory on by David Bowie, you're probably well into it.
You might be.
Does Kojima like the Beatles? Joking.
I'm finding out. I'm searching White Album first. specifically.
Sorry, the email is on pause while we do a Twitter advanced search.
Never tweeted about the White Album.
Wow.
Okay. What about Beatles? Never tweeted about the Beatles.
Wow, he just doesn't. Maybe, what if he doesn't know they exist? That would be the kind of thing, could you? It'd be like, never heard of
could
them.
Could be.
Never heard of
you them. You never know.
I feel like he's put John Lennon in a game before. Is there a John Lennon song in Metal Gear Solid 5? Or am I completely making that up? I don't know. Ian continues. Similarly, in 8th grade, I was obsessed with Final Fantasy X while listening to Tupac's Until the End of Time album. That is a bizarre combo. I spent many an hour dodging lightning bolts and trying to foil Seymour's plot while listening to Tupac's wax lyrical about his troubles.
You do, for dodging lightning bolts in that game, you absolutely need something to take your mind off it, because that is the worst.
While I wouldn't say either of these pairings necessarily go together like peanut butter and jelly, they remind me of a simpler time in life when I could relax, listen to a good album, and play video games with no responsibilities. To this day, I can't help thinking of Revolver Ocelot when I hear Rocky Raccoon, or of Tidus and Crew when Tupac's Lil Homies comes on.
I do like the idea of Final Fantasy not calling them parties anymore, just calling them Lil Homies. That would be great.
There we go. I wonder if Kojima likes Tupac as well. We're not going to do this for everything.
I'm not looking it up.
Thank you for the email, Ian. Yeah. Final Fantasy X is on my list of games to play. It's on my backlog list. So I will get around to Final Fantasy X one day. But there we go. Matt, bring us home.
I'm just going to have to find out who wrote this, because you haven't written who wrote it.
Oh, have I made a big mistake?
Made a boo-boo, Connie.
Oh, God. I'm so sorry.
You rotten bastard.
We've just got a new email in with quite the subject line, which in the last 10 minutes, which I know.
Oh my god.
It's too late.
Oh dear. Oh, that's a subject line. I'm not reading that, no.
This one also ends with respect the Cardi, so I want out. No, thank you.
I've never asked for that.
I'm going to say, Chris Milne, we have received your email. We'll consider it, but the subject line is off-putting. But you have misspelt Cardi like Cardi B all the way through.
Yeah, can people stop doing that? My name is Cardi with a Y, not an I.
He's card-like.
A rap artist. I am me. I was here first. I don't know if I was. Am I older than Cardi B? How old's Cardi B? Let's have a look. This has turned into a great, great search episode of the podcast. Oh, Cardi B is 6 months younger than me. She is 29. She will be 30 in October. I am, therefore, the original Cardi. I want to put that out there now.
Go for it.
Is your dad not the original Cardi?
Yeah, but, you know, we're talking about me and Cardi B right now.
Okay. Right. Anyway.
Who's the email from, Matt?
It's from Stephen Reynolds, who says, "Hey, the gaming touchpoint that often gets brought up in my friend circle is panic like it's mission day on Type Zero." This is a reference to the Final Fantasy game Type Zero. In the game, you are a student in a military academy and regularly get dispatched on missions. As a class, you always know when the next mission is. There's an in-game thematic countdown. A lot of the actions you take between missions deplete the countdown. Despite having full clarity on when the next mission will occur, the whole academy goes bananas on mission day like it was completely unexpected call to arms. Which they do. There's a huge, like, klaxon, and when you're running through the corridors, there's just people running all over the place and losing their heads. So, now, whenever someone goes into a full high panic alert mode when something planned arrives, it's like panic, like it's mission day on Type Zero. A few of us work in software development, and this comes up quite often. When a planned milestone arrives, and other colleagues who are completely aware of the timeline panic like it's mission day on Type Zero. Not games related, but we also reference things at work, like the Kobayashi Maru, when presented with a situation that has no positive outcomes, which is Star Trek's no-win training scenario. Keep up the good work. Oh, and for God's sake, respect the sea.
Steven clearly works in software development. If Type Zero and Kobayashi Maru are common touch points, congrats. Yeah. You work in good places.
I thought more about this. I don't know if we have many like that. We have, what about Zubats? That's kind of something that
Zubats is something that gets referenced quite a lot, yeah.
Do you want to explain? Go on.
Yeah, that was back to the days when Rory, ex of this parish, made a weird video featuring the Zubats from Pokemon Go and claimed that it would definitely get 250,000 views. And we now refer to that as getting Zubats because it didn't get anywhere close.
It could do Zubats. If you've got a weird video that you, or piece of content you think may do really well, it might do Zubats. It could do.
Yeah, I can't really think of other ones like that. We post that crying dude from the Miyazaki video quite a lot. The lad who gets told that his work is an insult to humankind.
It's similar to Type Zero. If you want a big, like, people going a bit, like, just big mass jubilation, you could go Full Bagwan from the Netflix documentary.
From Wild Wild Country, yeah.
Yeah. It's not really one, but we kind of just, when we say, is it Elite? That's kind of just a complete in-joke, though.
That was just me once saying, is it Elite, about controller.
We were at Gamescom. You asked me and Cooper, like, have you got any good questions for someone from Microsoft about the new controller, the new Elite controller? Yeah, and the first thing that came up was, is it Elite? Which is Elite? It's not a fun question. But it made us laugh. There you go. IGN_UK feedback at IGN.com. If you've got Elden Ring, Batman thoughts, music thoughts, Kojima thoughts, any thoughts. Not dark thoughts, though. I don't want to read any dark thoughts. Limit them anyway. Mildly dark. Joe, we're going to have your spectacular sausage song.
Yeah, this is a song called Sausage. It's based on every tweet at the time that Kojima had tweeted about sausages. Those are the lyrics. And it's from another podcast I do called Regular Features. Please listen to Regular Features. This has been a transparent advert for my side hustle. It's not very good, but enjoy yourselves.
There we go. Here is Sausage.
Matsuhana is having a huge rack of ribs as well. Me? I'll have some sausage. Jorge ordered sausage. Sausage after the rain. Sausage. 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 Sausage.
Sausage. Contained herein are the heresies of Radolf Buntwine, erstwhile monk turned traveling medical investigator. Join me as I uncover the blasphemous truth of a plague-ridden world. That ours is not a loving God, and we are not its favored children. The Heresies of Radolf Buntwine, coming January 2nd, wherever podcasts are available.